Hello and welcome to On the Clock Podcast, behind the Indiana Pacers draft pick. I'm Pat Boylan. On Thursday, the Indiana Pacers will make draft selections that very likely will alter the future of their franchise. The Pacers have had six draft workouts in an attempt to better narrow down their selection on who they may take on draft night. Here on this show, we'll go through every player that stepped inside Bankers Live Fieldhouse within the past month and hear from a select few of them why they think they would fit here in Indiana. We'll also sit down for three interviews during the entirety of this show. Landry Shamet is Greg Marshall's top prospect out of Wichita State, and the Wichita State Shocker coach will sit down with us to discuss a player that may be in the Pacers' range at 23. Antonio Davis's son, AJ, worked out for the Pacers a few weeks ago, and Antonio will join the show to give us more information on his son, as well as reminisce some of those great teams in the 90s and catch you up on what Antonio is doing these days. And finally, a bit later in our podcast, we'll be joined by Pacers Director of Player Personnel, Ryan Carr, who promises to have a very prominent role on who Indiana selects on draft night. Let's get started with draft workout number one. The Pacers brought in Jalen Adams, who's a 6'3 guard out of St. Bonaventure. Adams is expected to go undrafted. He's one of the many players Indiana brought in with the likely desire of seeing if they want to pick up a player after the draft has completed. Adams had 19 points per game in his senior season on 44% three-point shooting. Also likely fitting that mold is Marcus Foster. He's a 6'4 guard out of Creighton, and you'll notice a trend here as we go through a lot of these players the Pacers have brought in. A lot of guards and wings who can shoot the three-pointer. That was certainly true of Foster, who was at 41% from deep in his final season at Creighton. Nick King is an interesting case. He spent 2 years at Memphis, a year at Alabama, and it really wasn't until his final season when he transferred again and played at Middle Tennessee State where he exploded and really made his name on the scene, scoring 21 points per game in his senior year. Nick King, a little bit of a late bloomer. He likely also finds himself undrafted, but a player the Pacers certainly have their eye on. Yante Mayton was a 3-year starter at Georgia, and if you talk to any of the Bulldogs fans, they expect him to be an impact player in the NBA. He's a bit of a tweener. He could fall late to the second round, but somebody the Pacers have their eye on with pick number 50. Brandon McCoy out of UNLV. Some mocks have him right around the Pacers pick at 50. McCoy has some commonalities with Ike Anibogu, and that at 7'1", he has a great frame, but scouts are still trying to determine who he is. He's a raw big who left after just 1 year at UNLV, but he's a former McDonald's All-American and could be a high-ceiling selection for a team in the second round. Landry Shamet certainly could be in play for the Pacers at number 23. Shamet hails from Wichita State. He's a combo guard, and he may be the best pure shooter in the entire draft class. Shamet shot at 44% from three over his last two seasons. His head coach at Wichita State is, of course, Greg Marshall, and Marshall joins the show now. Coach, thank you for your time. Landry Shamet is a name that has been floated around nationally around the Pacers' selection. How would you describe him as a player?
He's very easy to coach, Pat. He's a guy that came in with a mindset that he wanted to play at the highest level and be great, and he's put himself in a position to do that now. He's done a tremendous job learning our system and then running our system and being the point guard, the quarterback on the court.
Shamet enters the draft as maybe the best pure shooter in the class. Coach, what is it about his game that allowed him to shoot at such a high level?
Well, he's always been a guy that could knock down shots. I mean, he came in as an off guard and kind of converted over to the point during his tenure with us and did a nice job with it, basically. It was a very smooth transition. He could still play the off guard at 6'4 and a half, 6'5, but he also can run a team and get everybody involved and knows every spot on the floor, so knows where people are supposed to be when they're supposed to be there.
Aspects like size, shooting, basketball IQ are all certainly important at the college level. You hear, though, NBA scouts discussing these attributes all the time. Do you think that allows him to translate well as a pro?
Oh, yeah. I think the cerebral part of the game and being a smart basketball player is going to be a check and hit. He'll be able to check that box. I mean, he's very smart. He makes the right read. He makes the right decisions by and large. His assist to turnover ratio is one of the best in our league last year, and I think he led our league in assists.
You've had a handful of players at Wichita that may have been good recruits or highly recruited, but weren't necessarily on draft boards. And yet, when you got your hands on them, they turned into just that. Shamet is a good example of it. In the past, Ron Baker, Fred Van Vliet. How are they able to develop under you and under your program in a way that all of a sudden has NBA scouts taking notice?
Well, I think you're being very kind in terms of saying highly recruited. I mean, Ron Baker was a walk-on here at Wichita State, and Fred Van Vliet, we didn't need too many people for his services. So Landry was a top 100 guy, borderline, maybe. Yeah, he did have some people at the BCS level recruiting him, but in the end, he chose our program. And I think the statistics are overwhelming now with how many players drafted in the first round come from teams that played in the NCAA tournament and come from programs in which, they had winning records and all of those things. So we've been able to get guys to come in here like Landry that wanted to be coached, wanted to improve. They didn't have all the answers walking in the door. They just wanted to get better and grind and win a championship and play in the NCAA tournament. If they stick around long enough, they want to get a degree, and then they want to play at the highest level, and he's done all of those things.
Do you sense, Greg, at all that NBA staff see a type of breed from your player in that they're under-recruited but overachieved at Wichita State, and that type of theme is something that NBA offices are looking for?
Well, you're the third person now this spring or summer that said that to me, so undoubtedly they are looking at that. They are looking for guys that are coming from programs where they know there's a high degree of accountability, and they're asked to do the right thing on and off the court, and winning is paramount. I mean, Landry's numbers are not just eye-popping because, I mean, we shared the ball, and he was getting other people involved, and I'm sure there's a lot of teams out there that would have tried to have him shoot the ball more and maybe average 20, 25 points a game. But for us, it was probably more like 15, 16. But he was very efficient when he did pull the trigger on his shot.
Are you able to stay in touch with Landry as he goes through these draft workouts and gets closer here to draft night?
Yeah, we've been texting most. You know, that's what kids like to do now. They like to text. And I'll certainly text him or call him right before the draft and wish him well and tell him, all the teams and organizations that have called and requested information on him, and it's all been very favorable. So it's been quite a whirlwind for him and for the rest of us back here in Wichita, because we've been getting a lot of inquiries about him. So I'm anticipating a positive result on Thursday night, and regardless of what happens, just like Ron, Fred, Teray Murray, Klee Anthony Early, and Gal McHale before, he's gonna go and he's gonna play in the NBA for as many years as he wants, and he's going to, hopefully win a couple championships on the way.
Greg, thank you for your insight on Landry Shamet. He sounds like a player that if he ends up in Indianapolis, fans would be very pleased with the player the Pacers get.
Thanks so much. I know you guys had a lot of scouts here several different times, and I got to know them and really liked them. So pulling for your program. Hopefully you guys do well in the draft and on into next year.
And Landry Shamet talked after his draft workout. He says former Wichita State pros Fred Van Vliet and Ron Baker have been very willing to yield their advice throughout the process.
Yeah, we talk all the time. Him and Ron both, they've both been really good taking care of me. Kind of letting me know about the road ahead, what to expect, what little pieces of advice here and there, what they did, how they handled things. So it's been really good, obviously, having them in my corner. Somebody I could call right now and he'd give me some advice, and both of them. So I'm really lucky to have both those guys.
We move on now to draft workout number two. It featured plenty of familiar faces to college and NBA fans. First up was NCAA champion Dante DiVincenzo, who most mocks have going perhaps a few picks ahead of Indiana, but the Pacers certainly wanted to get their look at the 6'5 shooting guard. DiVincenzo is built as an all-around athlete who can score at will and shot 40% from three his senior season. It's not often that a player of his caliber doesn't start in college. He explains how his role at Villanova helps him for the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it made that experience made the next experience easier, whatever it is. And like I said, if I'm just getting better every day, when my name's called, when my opportunity presents itself, I'm going to take advantage of it like I did this year. I mean, I really pride myself on that. I really pride myself on trying to be versatile. I try to use my athleticism, my strength, just to be able to guard bigger guys. And being able to guard bigger guys is just going to get me more minutes on the floor.
Another high-profile college player is Kata Bates-Diop, who also may be in first-round range for the Pacers. Bates-Diop appears on most mocks somewhere in the 20 to 35 range. While the ball skills need improvement for him to be an NBA regular, his length and athleticism provide plenty of promise should the Columbus product make his way to Indianapolis. A late bloomer, Alize Johnson, worked out. In 2011, he was a 5'9 high school guard, so it's 6'9 now entering the draft. It's natural that NBA scouts could be equal parts intrigued and skeptical. He's currently projected a late second-round pick and perhaps is a player that goes undrafted. Another player the Pacers wanted to look at but may not hear his name called on draft night is Gary Clark. His numbers at Cincinnati don't jump off the page, but his defense does, averaging over one block and one steal per game in all four college seasons. Shake Milton may have the draft's best name, and he's likely headed for early to mid-second round, meaning, yes, the Pacers are keeping an eye on the SMU prospect, too. Milton is a combo guard with a wingspan over 7 foot. That's nearly unheard of for a guard. And that may make up for some speed and athleticism questions. And finally, workout number two saw a player that may look a little bit familiar, A.J. Davis, or Antonio Jr., the son of former Pacers forward Antonio Davis. And Antonio was kind enough to chat with us now about his son's process. Former Indiana Pacer Antonio Davis joins us now. His son A.J. was working out for the Pacers in their draft workout series last week. Antonio, I know so many Pacers fans so fondly remember those mid-90s teams that you had a prominent role in, and I think some were probably a little bit amazed that time has passed in a way that it's already time that the Pacers are working out your son. Is it equally hard to believe in your position that it's already time for you to have a kid that's going through this process?
First of all, I'd like to thank the Indiana Pacers for even bringing him in. And yes, it's shockingly surprising, you know, that all this time has passed. But so many times when I've come back to, you know, visit, you know, see games, watch games, visit people there, and you see some of those, you know, same kids that were running around and now they're adults and married and stuff like that, it's pretty wild. But you know, it brings back a ton of memories and just appreciative, makes me more appreciative of my time there.
You were a second round pick. The time was different. Were there draft workouts for you? What do you remember of this process when you were going through it?
Well, you know, I chose to go overseas the first couple years. So I really didn't have any workouts. I was actually surprised when the Pacers called my name back in 1990, but thrilled nonetheless, and just knew that I had to go and hone my skills a little bit more, so decided to spend some time in Europe and really wait for that opportunity, I guess, that Larry Brown gave me after I came back from.
Do you see potential similarities then with you and your son that, you know, hopefully draft time will come around and his name might be called or a free agent contract, but if Europe is an option that he could follow a similar path?
Well, you know, you always have to keep those kind of things open. You know, you always are prepared for maybe a worst case scenario. With AJ, though, he's just... I wanted people to see him play because he's nothing like me. You know, he's a more skilled kid who can do a lot of the things that I could not do. And he's not, I mean, he's sort of like me in a way at that age, just, you know, need to put on some weight and do some different things. But the game has changed also. So I always tell him that it's best that he understands the fundamentals of shooting the ball and putting it on the floor, defending, and doing some of those things, and those will help him as his body, you know, continues to develop. So I think he had a great showing there, and now we'll just sit back and kind of wait and see what else happens.
Yeah, it's interesting because he kept mentioning that same fact, how he feels like he's a solid fit for the modern NBA. And obviously what you were in the 90s and the early 2000s was so vital to that game, but the game has changed. Is that something that you've worked with on him, understanding the evolution of the game, or has that kind of come naturally to him?
No, I always felt like, you know, in order to play this game today, and you can see it coming a mile away, you were, regardless of what your size was, you were going to have to learn how to play, you know, multiple positions, always know how to play out on the perimeter, be able to shoot the basketball, read plays, and all that kind of stuff. So ever since he was younger, coming up, I always thought it was important that he understood how to play the game of basketball and knew all the fundamentals. And then everything else, he would just have, it would just be up to him. So I think we've done a great job at doing that. He understands the game. He thinks it, he plays it. So, you know, hopefully the other stuff will just come with time. You'll be able to shoot the ball better and get in, you know, get into an NBA type of situation where the game can slow down a little bit and he can start thinking and playing the game.
What's it like as a dad who played in the NBA, having a son, and I know a daughter as well, who's gone through this process in terms of trying to be there for them and help them as much as possible, but not being over the top as a parent?
I think you said it. That was my biggest thing, is how do I support them? How do I give them the encouragement and support during really the low times, the high times, whatever? Always trying to ask them, you know, hey, is there something you need from me? Or, hey, I see this, do you mind me sharing? You know, whatever the case may be. And I think, you know, we've had our conversations about it. And the other thing, too, is you know, especially with AJ, I just didn't want people to kind of compare the two because we're nothing alike. You know, he's going to kind of, you know, pave his own way and do his own thing. And I'm excited for the possibilities for him as I am for Kayla. And I just wanted people to give him an opportunity to show, you know, what he could do. So I'm glad that the Pacers brought him in.
You've mentioned his game is very different from yours, and he's mentioned that a couple of times as well. Is there ever a moment when you were watching him and you say, okay, that looked a little bit like Antonio Davis back in the day? Is there any of that in his game that he still has?
Yeah, you know, every time I watch them play, you know, high school, college, and Kayla now in the pros, and hopefully AJ, I always have this knot in my stomach. And then they'll do something that's just so, like, wow, where did that come from? And I'm just amazed by it. But, I mean, AJ over the years has become a better rebounder. Kayla has become a better rebounder. And I've always told them, because I was told early on, if you learn how to defend and you rebound the basketball, you know, you'll always have value on a team. And as I watch them now, they're understanding those little things, you know, talking on defense and becoming a good defender. And then also just being a great teammate. I mean, those were things that I think I prided myself on. All that other stuff kind of came later. And I see them kind of doing the same thing, and it's helping them tremendously.
So what's the process for him? What are the plans between now and draft night?
He's got a couple other workouts this week. He was just in Memphis, and he has a couple other places that he's going. And then you just kind of sit back and wait. And if he's drafted, it's a very exciting moment. If not, we'll go and try to see if he can get on a summer league team, go to Vegas, and hopefully showcase a little bit more. Then you kind of sit back and wait, see if there's an opportunity for him to sign to a team. And if not, yes, you know, he'll have a chance to go to Europe, play some good basketball, hone his skills, and continue to, you know, knock on that NBA door to see if someone will answer.
Well, we certainly appreciate your perspective on what this has been like for you and your son. I'm curious, a little bit bigger picture here. It's been really interesting to watch you and a lot of those 90s Pacers kind of evolve into the broadcast realm. Have you enjoyed that? And what's life after basketball been like for you?
Oh man, it's been great. You know, I actually, you know, that kind of fell in my lap as I was here in Atlanta and the TNT studios took over NBA TV. I had a chance to go in real early and learn some things about broadcasting. Then got to ESPN, and it was a phenomenal experience, one I'll never forget. And now I've just kind of transitioned into working back again for the Players Association. They're having me kind of build a program to help guys transition out of the game of basketball. So I'm currently just reaching out to a ton of former players and hearing their stories about what they needed at that time and what they need going forward. And just excited about this opportunity that I have to kind of just help guys and continue to build things for the future.
Are you at a point in your life where you can kind of look back at some of those Pacers teams like fans do very often? I think the Reggie Miller documentary, 30 for 30, kind of look back and reminisce from time to time on just the excitement and what those years were and meant to a player like yourself?
Man, it's so funny you mentioned that. I was flipping channels the other day, and one of those Pacers-Knicks series games was on, and I kind of sat there with a smile and in amazement and just, you know, what we were able to do as a unit. And I hear it over and over again, and I'll echo those same things. When I talk to guys, the one thing that they miss is that camaraderie. And so I always... I'm checking in with guys, you know, Mark Jackson on his birthday, or Reggie if I see him on TV, or you know, sometimes, you know, Dale Davis and I, you know, have recently connected and we kind of talk once a week. Those conversations and those times that we had, you know, is what life is all about. And I kind of tell my kids the same thing, you know, you'll play this sport, you'll meet a lot of great people, but those relationships are just so key. So don't take them for granted. You know, make sure you appreciate each and every one of them.
Well, that's Antonio Davis. Antonio, we certainly appreciate your time here this morning, and best of luck to you, your son, your daughter, and everything that this process has going forward here.
Thank you, and thank the Pacers organization again, and hopefully the fans may see my son in a Pacers jersey.
I know they would certainly like to start reliving the Davis era, I'm sure.
All right, take care.
And after the draft workout, AJ discussed the workout from his point of view.
Kind of surreal, you know, like I've been around here since I was born. I was actually born in Indianapolis, so to be back here now after everything my dad's done in this organization, have a chance to work out for him is just really humbling and just a great honor. I think we're very different, you know, but I think the game's just changed, and that's kind of what makes us different. But at the same time, we're similar. I think I play really hard. I play defense well. I rebound the ball really well. You know, I make tough plays, tough basketball plays that, you know, not everybody's willing to make. So, you know, we're different in the sense that the game of basketball is kind of changing as far as the NBA, but, you know, our overall approach to the game is very similar.
Draft workout number 3 featured a former Butler Bulldog and a Bosnian among 6 players. Tyler Wideman took place in the workout just down the street from where he played his college ball. He knows his NBA draft chances may be slim, but the Hoosier native and local forward is hoping the Pacers workout can begin to get him on other teams' boards. UCLA's Thomas Welsh may not hear his name called on draft day either, but he's hoping his remarkable transition from the three-point line may help. The 7-foot center has plenty of size, but after taking just 1 three-pointer in his first 3 seasons at UCLA, he took 112 of them his senior season, and he made an impressive 40% of them. Welsh has plenty of familiarity with current Pacer Bruins, TJ Leaf, and EK Anibogu. Virginia center Devin Hall may be on Indiana's second-round radar. Like many Cavaliers, an ability to defend seems to come in his DNA. Hall will likely never be a big-time scorer, but his versatility on defense is a highly coveted attribute, and it's something Hall possesses. Bruce Brown Jr. is a rare player who has seen his stock drop. A foot injury has likely taken him out of the first round. So has a falling three-point percentage, down to just 27% his sophomore season, His supreme athleticism, though, will likely get his name called on draft day, and perhaps in round two, he's a bit of a value. And finally, Janan Musa from Bosnia. His ability to score at the European level is remarkable. The talent makes him believe he could go in the top 15 picks. His athleticism and inconsistency do bring up some question marks, but his natural scoring ability, and you'll hear here, his confidence, bring plenty of intrigue.
Yeah, my confidence. I think that that people miss me wrong because they think I'm arrogant, but I don't like to call myself that way. I just want to be have fun on the court. I just want to be confident when I have the ball. I just want to be celebrating every basket, interacting with the fans, with the media. So I like to have fun.
Transitioning now to workout number four. It was a single-player workout, just one player in the building. Due to logistics, Jalen Brunson worked out in front of Pacers brass in a solo workout. Like DiVincenzo, his collegiate success has put a large spotlight on him. Here was Brunson after the workout.
It was a great experience. I was able to go out there and just not really focus on the eyes or anything, not being the only one in the workout, just focusing on making sure I'm making myself the best player I can be today. I think I can contribute a lot. I think just the way this team's built, just being able to watch them last year a little bit, seeing how they're just so together, seeing how they really gel together as a team. And obviously, you can see that no one really cares about the individual things. They just want to play well as a team, and I think I can contribute to that a lot.
There was more local influence in draft workout number five. IU's Robert Johnson speaks to his decision to go back to college last year and enter this season in 2018.
Yeah, just that I need to be more consistent. From three, show that I could really be a lockdown defender and be more of an efficient scorer. I definitely feel like, going through these workouts and the work that I've put in, I would definitely be able to play the point guard position in the NBA.
Quentin Snyder entered out of Louisville, the guard looking to take advantage of a season with the Cardinals and no Donovan Mitchell on the floor. His shot improved. He got to the line more often. And he's hoping his proficiency in the pick and roll could get an NBA team to take a chance on him. Jayshon Tate became the second Buckeye to take the Pacers draft workout floor. While Bates Diop is the higher rated prospect of the two, Tate brings a physicality and brought a winning element to Ohio State. He's tough and physical, but the 52% free throw shooting and 31% 3-point numbers for a 6'4 player bring some red flags. He'll be looking to prove his shooting worth at workouts. Jordan Barnett came to Bankers Life Fieldhouse after playing at Texas and then Missouri. Barnett suffered through off-the-court issues that caused him to miss a tournament game, but he was very efficient at Missouri, shooting 41% from three and 89% from the foul line. At 6'7", he should find a shot somewhere to prove his worth at an NBA camp. And finally, the fascinating story of Yuta Watanabe, who averaged 16 points per game in his senior season at George Washington. He's been dubbed the Chosen One in his native Japan, and as he looks to become just the second Japanese-born player to play in the NBA, he talked about some of the pressures that come along with that.
I mean, that means a lot to me. I mean, NBA has been my dream since I was a kid, and like you said, there's the only Japanese guy who played in the NBA about 10 years ago, so I'm gonna do whatever it takes, and we see what happens. It's a great experience to a lot of people care about what I'm doing, and hopefully I can make them happy.
The Pacers' final draft workout took place on Tuesday, and it featured some more local flavor. Keelan Martin from Butler.
I have to know that everybody in the NBA can score, so I got to find a role that'll help the team, and I think I can find a role. Being a three-point shooter and defender, so I think a 3 and D guy, rebounding, just doing a lot of gritty stuff.
Moving on, Raleigh Alkins draws a pretty regular comparison. Lance Stephenson. Alkins is from New York and has a brash style of game. While DeAndre Ayton got most of the publicity at Arizona, Alkins put together a very impressive season as well. And the Pacers know better than anyone the positive energy a Lance Stephenson type can bring. Marcus Derrickson was given even more opportunity in his third year at Georgetown, and he made the most of it, scoring 16 points per game and shooting a remarkable 47% from the three-point line. He's likely another undrafted player that the Pacers would consider in the free agent market. Arnoldas Kolboka from Lithuania seems favored to be a second-round selection. One mock draft even likes the Pacers taking him at pick 50. He's a 6'11 power forward and a terrific shooter in Europe. In fact, one of the best overseas. But he'll likely need to bulk up and prove he can defend well enough for an NBA level. But a near 7-footer that can shoot at his level certainly caught the eye of the Pacers on Tuesday. Elia Kobo hails from France. He stands a good chance to hear his name called before round two even begins. Okobo is a point guard who is still learning to become a point guard, but his scoring ability and athleticism are what likely makes him a first-round selection. That and his 6'8 wingspan. As with most international players, his potential is a bit of a mystery. He describes, though, what he can be.
I describe my game as a point guard, be able to shoot the ball, play off and on the ball, and be able to play for everybody, make everybody better, and the playmaking and bring energy on the court.
Finally, North Carolina's Theo Pinson worked out on Tuesday. Pinson wasn't initially even invited to the NBA Draft Combine until he got a last-minute call to head to Chicago. Pinson averaged 10 points and 7 rebounds his senior year at UNC and was a big reason for another successful season in Chapel Hill. As the Pacers' brain trust begins to whittle down their lists and hunker in for draft night, we're joined by one of the most influential people in that draft room and in the organization when it comes to the draft. Ryan Carr joins us now. We're here now with Director of Player Personnel, Ryan Carr, and we get a couple of days now away from the draft, so we're really close. But for you, this is a process I know that goes back months and even years to get to this point for this class. As you've gotten this close now to draft day, how would you characterize the 2018 draft class?
I think it's a good class. Last year's was probably a little bit deeper at the top, but you know, as this year has gone on, I think the class has proven to be a little stronger than probably what we thought going into the year as different kids emerge and get better. So you know, it's a good draft. There's players that are, you know, going to be good NBA players and probably picked in throughout the draft, and you know, it'll be exciting to get to see how they pan out after all this time and watch them and critiquing them and picking them apart and all that.
You had 6 draft workouts. We're talking to you here after a draft workout. What all can you evaluate during that time?
Yeah, it's great to see the guys work with our coaching staff. It's great to see how coachable they are, to see how they compete. You know, I don't think our workouts are designed to try to push them to the physical limit. We want to find out about them as basketball players, their skill sets. Also gives a huge slice of our staff the chance to interact with them, get to know them a little bit. And I think that's really important as well. Our trainers are going to have to work with, you know, whoever we pick, the strength guys. You know, they get a chance. We take them out to lunch and get to know them a little bit that way. Just get to see them interact inside and outside the building. It's a good part of the process for a lot more than just what they do in the, you know, hour they're on the court.
How influential can one of these draft workouts be? And I give an example of a few years ago. To the untrained eye, at least, it seemed like Miles Turner had a really good workout.
Yeah, Miles had a great workout. I think that solidified with us that some of the potential that we had seen in practices and a little bit in games, but mostly in practices at Texas, was really there. And then again, you combine it with him as a person, and all that stuff, and it really solidified the fact that he would be a good pacer.
As you've gone through this process, there's of course the challenge of some of these guys are playing here in the U.S., some are overseas. I know you have a staff that helps you with that, but what's the challenge of looking at somebody who maybe is playing at a high level of college basketball versus a mid-major versus somebody who's playing at a different level overseas?
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it fuels some great discussions. You know, you look at those categories and it's all different. Like some of the, you know, some of these overseas guys have been pro since they were 15 at different levels. Some of them are hardly playing because they play for huge clubs that are, you know, competing for EuroLeague titles. you know, mid-majors, you're always talking about, well, where would they be if they were at a, you know, what role would they play if they were at a high major? I mean, these discussions are all kind of ongoing, and there's no right or wrong to it. Each player is kind of their own story, and kind of have to vet it out for what it is and figure out what you think, because you can never, you can't move the pieces around and see how somebody that played in the Big Ten would play in the French League, or, you know, vice versa. So, you know, you just, you talk about it. You have great people that work hard, that take pride in what they do, and have a great, you know, basketball minds, and take the analytics, you take the different parts of it, and you put it all together and see where it comes out.
When you're picking at 23, assuming that is where you end up picking at 23, how do you evaluate some of those players there? And you hear a lot of best player available versus needs on the floor. At 23, as that gets a little bit later, does that change in a decision process?
I think it would probably skew more towards the best player available. You know, as we do studies on the hit and miss rates of each pick, and you know, it falls off pretty quick. So, you know, when you're at 23, if you feel like there's somebody that has a chance to be a rotation player for you for a number of years in their career, any player like that would probably rise to the top. Obviously, if you thought you could get a starter, you would go all in on that. If all the other things matched out, but you know, otherwise you start getting, you don't want to drop, we tier guys, and you don't want to drop down a tier, because the likelihood that they make it, you know, is increasingly more challenging.
I think a lot of people understand with your job that it is scouting, and it is being a major advisor to Kevin and to Chad and to Peter once the pick comes in. There's an interesting element to me, though, about it, and when you go back to, let's say, the Thaddeus Young decision, in that in a situation like that, and maybe you can't speak necessarily specifically to it, but I would guess there's also part of your job that says, hey, we like Thad more than any potential player on the board there.
That's so true. You know, most of my time traveling away from home is for the draft, but it's, you know, but it's also making sure that we're organized for trades and, you know, free agency and all that. And we, Vance and his guys do a great job with that. But an important question that has to be answered every draft is, if these guys are gone, you're better off doing something else. You know, in that, with Thad, I think it's played out that was, you know, absolutely the right line that we drew, where we, you know, it made most sense. And Larry, you know, Larry made that call, and for our team, it was the right call in that draft, and the player that is.
So when draft night comes around here, where will you be? What will your active responsibilities be here at the St. Vincent Center?
Yeah, well, we'll be up in the war room and watching the draft. And, you know, my thing is, I my number one job on that night, I feel like, obviously, is to give my opinion if it's needed. We've been given our opinions for a long time at this point, but is to make sure that any information that we need is accessible quickly and clearly. And if I can make sure that any question that comes up can be answered quickly and clearly, then I feel like it'll be a success, and the right decision will get made.
Well, Ryan, we appreciate your time. Best of luck as this process unfolds on Thursday.
Thanks, Pat.
There's an inside look at what the Indiana Pacers are looking at for draft night. Make sure to stay tuned to our draft coverage. We will have a live show streaming on Facebook Live and on Pacers.com, where Jeremiah Johnson and me will break down the picks as they lead up to the Pacers draft. It will be a Pacers-centric draft show. So if you're watching the national feed, you can watch us as well as a second screen and find out as the picks are coming in how those selections may affect Indiana's position at pick number 23. Of course, make sure to stay tuned to Pacers.com as well as all of Pacers on social media. We have major draft coverage plans coming your direction on all of our digital channels. Thursday night could be a franchise-altering night for the Pacers, and we hope you're with us throughout the entirety of what should be a very exciting night.